again, but I'm going to start over just because we want to make sure everything is here and that could be edited out. My name is Lucy Hart Paulson, and I'm a speech and language pathologist and have been doing it for decades. And I know the powerful connection between the way we learn how to talk and how we learn how to read. And I had this very early burning question in my career decades ago about what kinds of strategies can we teach and can we use to teach early literacy and language skills to young children so that their road to reading will be as smooth as possible. And as a result of that question, I pursued my doctorate degree in education with a focus in early literacy. And I do a lot of professional development with early childhood educators. And looking at the list of people who are participating, I see that you all probably have a lot of similar experiences as what I do in sharing this information. One of my biggest focuses is taking the research and then putting that into an applicable kind of process for teachers to add into what it is that they're already doing. So in our chat today, I want to talk about perceptions of literacy development, and because we know that how you feel about how literacy develops certainly influences how you teach. And talk about some early literacy foundations. What are those critical elements or components that build the foundation for later literacy learning? And through that process, look at some assessment kinds of issues, and then wrap it up with talking about some trends in early literacy, some things that we see happening within our culture, within our society, that are impacting children's learning. So, from a historical perspective, we have a shift in our definition of what early literacy is. And we look at this illustration where this little boy is saying excitedly, "I can read the pictures," which is a great definition for a little kiddo who may be 3 or 4 years of age. It's not such a great definition of reading for children who may be in first or second grade. And this sense of early literacy, with the research that has been done, has given us a much deeper understanding of the early years that provide a critical basis and foundation for success in learning to read and write when a more formal or traditional processes are established in kindergarten and in first grade. The work that Hart and Risley did for us that identified that the talk that goes around young children is critical to academic success, correlated highly with academic success, the words that children hear. And so the definition that we'll be using today in our time looks at early literacy in terms of a definition of taking place between birth to 6 years of age. And I would submit that it may even begin earlier than birth. And one of the pieces of evidence that we have for that is that a newborn baby is able to recognize his or her mother's voice because of the way that it sounds. And that's evidence that would suggest that that phonological processing system is already starting to develop. So let's take a look at your perception of how literacy develops. And I have 8 statements that I would like to, just in a reflective kind of opportunity, read through and then have you identify for yourself what is your sense of how literacy develops. Do you agree with this statement or feel fairly ambivalent about it, fairly neutral, or disagree with the statement? So just on your own, give a thumbs up or a thumbs down to each of these statements, and then we'll look at where these statements come from. So number 1, in order to learn to read, a child needs to know letter names and letter sounds. What do you think about that? The second one, becoming literate is a continuous developmental process that begins very early in life. A third one, early reading and writing practices exhibited by children result from direct instruction and guidance. What are your thoughts on that one? Number 4, to become literate, young children must have many and varied opportunities to read and write. Okay, number 5, what do you think about this? Teaching of literacy must be systematic and sequential in operation. 6, reading and writing activities should be provided throughout the day in all areas of the curriculum. couple of more. Number 7, reading includes the mechanical skill of turning printed symbols into sounds that are language. And number 8, play is one of the best ways for young children to learn about written language. Okay, 8 statements. And we can put those statements into 2 different perspectives. We can take the odd-numbered items, 1, 3, 5, and 7, and those are reflective of the evidence-based reading research perspective. And we can take the even-numbered items, the emergent literacy perspective, or the even-numbered items, 2, 4, 6, 8, and those represent the emergent literacy perspective. So let's talk about, from a definition point of view, where each of those perspectives come from. So from the evidence-based reading research perspective, there are 2 main components. One component is that there is an identified set of skills or knowledge bases that children need to have in order to become successful readers and writers. The second focus includes the strategies that we use to teach these skills in a direct instructional kind of opportunity. So that's the evidence-based reading research perspective, and we can compare that to the emergent literacy perspective, which has also 2 main focuses. One focus is creating the environment that has lots of opportunities for language and literacy and print experiences and opportunities. And then the other element is that within that environment, children have the opportunity to explore and learn. So thinking about each of those perspectives, let's go back and look at those individual statements. From the first one, an evidence-based reading research perspective, in order to learn to read and write, children need to know names of letters and letter sounds. And the research is very clear. And in fact, children, what they typically do is learn capital letters and then lowercase letters and then learn to associate the speech sounds that those letters represent. It's very clear. And what I see oftentimes within groups of early childhood educators is that there's not necessarily an appreciation or an understanding of what those developmental sequences are. I also see that there are some early literacy curriculums that focus on teaching lowercase letters and not letter names, but focus on showing a lowercase letter and then focus on teaching the sound that that letter makes without also focusing on the letter name. And so with those kinds of programs, what I share with early childhood educators is that you can make that program better by incorporating the skills that we see within the research, that those developmental sequences that children follow. Names tend to be easier than sounds. Okay, let's look at the next piece. Becoming literate is a continuous process, and that begins early and continues. Hopefully, we're always learning new kinds of things. The next one, early reading and writing practices exhibited by children are a result of direct instruction and guidance. And this is another one that we see is a true evidence-based practice, something that is supported within the literature. And we can define what direct instruction practices look like. And simply, if a family or a parent is sitting down with an ABC book and reading it with their daughter Abby and pointing out to her that her name starts with an A, and just like alligator and apple do, that is an example of a direct instruction and a guidance within the early literacy practice. Okay, number 4, to become literate, young children need to have many and varied opportunities to read and write. Certainly that one is an easy one to agree to. Number 5, teaching of literacy must be systematic and sequential in operation. There is a defined sequence in how literacy develops, and understanding those developmental sequences is a really important part of our professional development. Number 6, reading and writing activities should be provided throughout the day in all areas of the curriculum? Absolutely. Number 7, reading includes the mechanical skill of turning printed symbols into sounds that are language. That's what our alphabet system is. And number 8, play is a great way for children to learn about written language. You bet. So my point is, is that it's a blended and a balanced approach to literacy instruction. From the National Association for the Education of Young Children, we know that there are core skills that have been identified that are predictive of reading success. We know that oral language is a very important foundation for literacy. And at a preschool level, storybook reading is a cornerstone of what we do in our early childhood settings. And we do those within print and language and literacy-rich environments with lots of opportunities for talking and listening and speaking and writing and drawing and singing and using developmentally appropriate practice. Another responsibility that we have is helping families support their children's literacy and language learning. And another important element of what it is that we need to do is make sure that we have an assessment process that helps us guide what it is. It helps us establish an understanding of what our children know, and then it guides our instruction in helping us identify what it is they need to learn. And those assessment processes and our instructional strategies need to be guided by standards that define what it is children need to know in order to become successful readers and writers. So it's a blended approach of using both an evidence-based reading research perspective and an emergent literacy perspective. So the results of the National Early Literacy Panel have come out, and some of the major findings of the National Early Literacy Panel include these three things. One, the foundations of early literacy include oral language, phonological processing, and print knowledge. Those are the foundations that create the opportunity for children to learn to read and write. And they're strongly predictive of those later skills, which give us an understanding of how literacy is systematic and sequential in its development. Another finding from the National Early Literacy Panel includes targeted practices that are more likely to be effective than non-targeted practices. So when we have an essence of explicit instruction, we have stronger learning outcomes than when we just leave some kind of learning skill to an implicit level or up to chance. And then another finding from the National Early Literacy Panel is that when there are lots of unrelated skills that are targeted at the same time, then the learning outcomes are not as strong as when compared to interventions that focus on one skill or a set of interrelated skills. And that tells us that explicit instruction is an important part of what it is that we do in early childhood settings. So it's both the environment and our direct instruction of teaching explicit skills that makes a difference. But what about, moving to the next slide, what about that academicness in a preschool and kindergarten setting? Does it seem that there's kind of this downshifting of the curriculum from first grade to kindergarten and kindergarten into preschool? In part, that's true. But other elements to counter that is that there are, well, number one, there are higher levels of literacy learning that we need to have now in order to be successful. Imagine being a teenager today and not knowing how to use your cell phone to text. It takes you out of a lot of those social settings. And play-based, as opposed to drill and practice curricula, we can use with children and meeting their developmental needs, and we can use those play-based practices to help foster academic and attention skills in lots of ways that are fun and engaging. So let's take a look at what some of those foundation skills are, and then I'll share with you a few things that I have found to use skills and activities that help to build those skills in young children. So moving on to the next piece, early literacy foundations. So we know through the research, established in the research, that there are some predictive skills that give us an idea of children's road to reading. We can look at their phonological and phonemic awareness, see how that is developing, what their semantic knowledge is, their understanding of the language, oral language structures, and orthographic knowledge. Those three foundations, again, give us an idea of where children are at. And we have a pretty good idea, according to Richard Wagner, better than 90% accuracy in identifying the kids that are going to be struggling in second grade based on the lack of skills that they have in those areas. So, what do we need to teach young children? Within the three focuses of early literacy foundations of oral language, with the focus on speaking and listening, with phonological processing, which is our conscious awareness of and the ability to manipulate sound structures in words. Now, just a minute on this. It used to be that phonological awareness was the big buzzword, the big important word. We know it's a little bit bigger than just phonological awareness, and it has to do with our ability and several different skill abilities within this notion of phonological processing. So I'm going to have you say a word to illustrate what elements you need to use in order to help you consciously manipulate sound structures in words. So say the word out loud to yourself. Say tiger. Now say it again, but don't say the g sound. So you came up with the word tire, probably pretty readily. So in order to complete that task, what you needed to do first was hold the word tiger in your phonological memory. That's where you stored that word long enough to be able to manipulate it using your phonological awareness skills. And then you needed to come up with a new word, so you needed to use your phonological naming skills to come up with the word tire. Now, each one of those skills is required in order to participate in the activities that we have identified as being part of phonological awareness, but a bigger picture than just the manipulation part. And then the third foundation is print knowledge, with three subcomponents in our understanding of the concepts of print, in children's understanding of letter and alphabet knowledge, and then also being a writer. So let's take a look at each of those pieces, how those three pieces create the foundation for the next step of moving from early literacy into early reading. And those three early literacy foundations provide the foundation for phonemic awareness, for phonics, vocabulary, for fluency leading into comprehension. And then if you include the reading or spelling and the writing aspect, then you have the complete literacy package. So I've included for you an early literacy checklist. This is a checklist that is adapted from the publication that Michael talked about, Building Early Literacy and Language Skills, affectionately known as BELLS. This is a checklist, and as you look at the components on the checklist, it includes oral language, it includes phonological awareness, and it includes print knowledge. And if the checklist is helpful for you, then please feel free to use it. And what the checklist identifies are those skills, those indicative skills that help us identify where children are at through our assessment processes, and then where we know where they're at, and then we know what we need to teach them. So let's take a look at each of those foundation areas specifically. So we have oral language, and within oral language, we want children to learn basic concepts and vocabulary. We want them to listen to and have opportunities to hear the structures of our words so that they're able to then process that information and then learn how to say those sound structures within their own speech. We want children to understand complex sentence structures and learn how to create their own sentence structures that are more complex. And then we also want children to be able to relate events in stories and in narratives. And we've already said that storybook reading is the cornerstone for early literacy. And here's a perfect example of how we can take a story like The Mitten by Jan Brett, which is a great one to use during this time of the year. And in the handout, in the PowerPoint, I've typed out three paragraphs. And in three paragraphs of this book, which is not a majority, certainly, of the text that is in this book, and you turn to the next slide, notice how many words in those three paragraphs more than 20 words that children may or may not be aware of. The rare words in our world live, particularly in children's environments, live in the storybooks that we read. And that's why it's so important that we choose storybooks that are going to help expand their language. If we turn to the next slide, in these three paragraphs of The Mitten, with the basic concepts and vocabulary, there are 23 potentially unfamiliar words for children. There are complex word structures that help children build a sense of their own speech intelligibility, or the structures that they're able to use. The longest sentence in these three paragraphs is 23 words long. I can tell you that in the entire book, the longest sentence is 36 words long. Is that surprising to you? Does that mean that we should read this book with simplified syntax? We may need to at the beginning to help children understand what the meaning is of those complex sentences, but it's such an important way of exposing children to the complex language structures that we have so that they can gain a deeper understanding and comprehension of what those sentences are. And then we take a focus on literacy, or the narratives, and within each paragraph there are two events. So in one storybook reading opportunity, we can identify these elements within the oral language process that are critical for early literacy development. So that's oral language in a nutshell. We can look at the next foundation piece of phonological processing, and within phonological processing, the skill set that is the easiest one for us to teach and train is phonological awareness. And we look at the areas of rhyming and blending and segmenting, and those lead to manipulation. One area that we can also consider is alliteration, which focuses on the beginning sounds in words. And just through that process in and of itself, identifying beginning sounds is an essence of isolating a sound from the rest of the word. And so within the checklist, there's not a component that identifies specifically alliteration skills, but the task of being able to identify what a beginning sound is in a word is in the section of segmenting, because in essence, that's what you're doing. So let's take a quick look at how phonological awareness skills develop. We have rhyming, which begins with children participating in the songs and finger plays that they get to experience, like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Think of a young, young child learning that song, and you'll hear them say, Tin, tin, little star, high, one, what, are. What are they focusing on? They're focusing on the words that rhyme, and that's almost an inherent component of the songs and finger plays that we use with young children, and why it's so important that that song and finger play experience is an important part of our early childhood settings. Then children learn to match words that rhyme during the preschool experience. That would be taking an activity like Hickory Dickory Dock, the mouse ran up the sock. Did that work? Dock, sock, clock. Or how about this one? Hickory dickory dock, the mouse ran up the bus. Did that work? Bus, clock. No, that one didn't work so much. And then moving into an opportunity where now we hope children learn to produce words that rhyme. And that skill tends to develop in the late preschool moving into kindergarten. So from an assessment point of view, if you have preschool kids who are not tuning into rhyme, we need to probably increase the amount of opportunity that they have so that it's something that they're learning to do. And when you have a kindergarten age child that's not producing words that rhyme, we better figure out what's going on. Okay, alliteration. It follows the same sequence as rhyme development, but at a later date, where children are later through their developmental process. So children first learn how to match words that begin with the same beginning sound, and then learn to produce words that begin with an initial sound. And in the research, alliteration has not had a whole lot of research done on this particular task, and I think it's one that within the research we still have some information or need to get some better information on. Now, when you, in early childhood settings, have rhyming activities and alliteration activities in close approximation from a time-wise perspective, it can be quite confusing for young children. And so what our recommendation is that if you do a rhyming activity, wait for a while until you also then do an alliteration activity, because young kids really don't understand linguistically what rhyming is and what alliteration is. What they're doing is following your model and then trying to imitate and copy that. Okay. Blending and segmenting, they are opposite skills, where you're squeezing things together, parts together, or pulling parts of words or pulling parts in words into a segmented manner. And these skills are very easily done in teaching young children in the same activity. And if you look from a developmental perspective, children are able to learn to blend syllables. So if I have a little object in a grab bag surprise kind of activity, so I pull a little item out of my bag and I hold it in my hand, hiding it from them, and say, guess what I have? I have a kangaroo. And children are able to blend those syllables together to say kangaroo, certainly in preschool kinds of settings. Same thing with segmentation. So they get to pull an item out of the bag. Tell me what the parts are. What are the syllables in this word? And they're able to say elephant, blending and segmenting within the same activity. Now when we look at sounds or phonemes, what we see is young children are able to blend sounds together sooner, generally, than they're able to identify or isolate individual sounds in words. And then manipulation tasks, generally within the literature, indicates that children generally learn to make changes within words with the onset of reading. And then we have that orthographic strategy that we can add to what it is that we're learning, are able to do. Okay, so really quickly, a few activities that we can do. In a beginning circle activity, we can take a bee puppet, and sing the song, Hickety Pickety Bumblebee, Please Say Your Name for Me, seeing who's here in our circle today, who's here in class today. And we can take children's names, and you can clap out one clap for every syllable. And an easy way of incorporating phonological awareness into everything that we do, into a lot of the everyday routine kinds of activities. Okay, another activity that I want to share with you, and it's my favorite blending and segmenting activity, and it's taking pictures that we have and then cutting them into picture puzzles. So a couple of examples that we have, starting with bigger elements first and taking a picture maybe of a bicycle, cutting into those constituent parts, and then you're able to segment it by saying bicycle and squeezing, putting the puzzle together and blending it into bicycle. Then we can go to the next linguistic level and we can take a picture of maybe a book and cut it into two parts and we can say it's a book. And then go to the next linguistic level where now we have every single sound that is represented on a piece of the puzzle. So we have a book. And then we can squeeze that together and say it's a book. So those are a few ideas of some activities to help train phonological awareness skills in young children. And here's why that is so important. According to the work that Sally Shaywitz has done and a number of other neuroscientists, is that what we know about phonology is that phonological skills separate good readers from poor readers. They don't go away on their own, and they can be identified pretty early on in those preschool years when we focus within our assessments on rhyming and segmenting and blending. And a study that was done by Sally Shaywitz, her husband Bennett Shaywitz, and a number of other very well-respected researchers, and the results of this study identified once again that the central difficulty with reading dysfunction reflects a deficit within the phonological component of the language system, and that has to do with our ability to access the underlying sound structures of words, a really critical piece for not only oral language development, but also written language development, and a piece within the recent reading research that has really emphasized and deepened our understanding of the contribution that the phonological processing system adds to the reading process. Okay, one more piece, really quickly, going through where we're, the foundation of oral of early literacy, and that's looking at print. And we know the concepts of print and what children understand about how books work, how print works. You start at the top and you go to the bottom. You start at the left and you sweep across to the right. A one-to-one correspondence. We're pretty good in early childhood settings teaching these skills to children. Another component of print knowledge is letter knowledge, which leads to the alphabetic principle. So children learn the names of the alphabet, and then they learn that the alphabet represents speech sounds, and they make this sound-symbol connection. And a great way of doing that, one of the things we know in preschool is to have children overlearn the alphabet song. Then we can take the alphabet song and the pattern of the song and overlay that in a written format and come up with an ABCI chart where we have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, and you know the rest of it, where it's another way of putting skill information together for children to make it easier. And then a third piece, which is quite important for young children, is being a writer. In an essence of providing opportunities at children's developmental level that give them with lots of opportunities to write in a functional kind of way. Here's an example of a child who, during the next time he comes to his school setting, he wants to play with the school, the little Fisher Price school. And so he wrote a note to his teacher indicating he has some letter knowledge of what words are. He's got a scribble sense, and then he's figuring out that words are represented by speech sounds when he wrote an S for the word school. Very cool indication that his literacy skills are developing. And what we know in an overall piece is that the two best predictors of how well a child is going to learn during the first 2 years of instruction are what they know about letter names and what they know within their phonemic awareness skills of being able to isolate sounds in words. That was information that came from the National Reading Panel. So we have lots of important early literacy experiences and opportunities for children based in storybook reading, making sure we have interactive conversations with young children. It encourages their storybook telling and retelling, lots of rhyming games and finger plays and word games and play, and lots of print-rich materials and opportunities to write in using developmentally appropriate strategies. So let's wrap it up with a few trends that we see in early literacy. There was a study conducted, a meta-analysis, that looked at what are the skills at a preschool level that are predictive of later academic success. And one of the indicators was is that early math is an important skill. And I bet for most early childhood educators that was not a surprise. One of the surprises was is that within this particular study, there was a less of an emphasis on the importance of social and behavioral skills. So that's still one that's chewing around in my mind because we know how important those social interactions are. And you compare that to another meta-analysis study that was done in 2000 that did identify social and emotional skills very important to literacy. So how about play? Here are some influences within our society that are impacting children's development. And part of it has to do with just changes in what is available for children, what activities we are participating in. And play is a very important aspect of children's social and emotional and cognitive growth. It's how they work through some learning experiences. And as we know, children spend a lot of time in supervised and structured settings, more so than they did several decades ago. And because of the toys that children are engaged with, and that they use to play, there's some essence of a lack of creativity because a lot of the electronic toys that children have keep their learning at a surface level, telling them what to do as opposed to children coming up with their own creativeness and their own creative play. So toys such as handheld video games can easily become a substitute for social interaction. So they're very isolating in terms of that socialness that's required in learning to talk and in learning to read. And there's a lot of time that children are participating in looking at screens, which on one hand takes opportunities away from that social and engaging activity that we know is important in learning to read and learning to talk. And there's some some fairly startling research that identifies what's going on within brain development and what we know within early childhood settings, within early childhood years. That's when our brain is developing at the fastest rates ever. And so creating opportunities for children that are active help them create stronger neural pathways. So what do we need to do in terms of our own professional development, whether we're an early childhood educator or whether we're someone that gets to work with early childhood educators and helping them understand the things that we need to do in creating rich learning environments for children and designing developmentally appropriate strategies that help build those early literacy skills in young children so that their road to reading is going to be as smooth as possible. We want to deepen our own understanding of what those processes are, and so that we're able to do the very best job that we can. So within our chat today, we've talked about our perception of early literacy development, and our perception influences the way that we teach. And if we have a blended understanding of not only creating really rich language, literacy, print-based environments, but also an understanding that there are absolutely things that we can do to teach children directly and explicitly the skills that they need to know in order for literacy to be the most successful opportunity for them. Those are the elements that we work on in early literacy kinds of opportunities. We know that the foundations are. We know that an assessment of those foundation skills is really important. And we also have some trends that are impacting what it is that we're learning or how our children are learning. And so I have a quick story I want to share with you wrapping up our conversation today. And that is, there was a little four-year-old boy who came into my understanding. I got to assess him, and his speech was pretty difficult to understand. His sentence structure wasn't developing at a level that we wanted it to be. His mom has a very significant learning disability and can read at about a third grade level. He had an older brother who was practically a non-reader. And this little kiddo had a number of ear infections within his medical history. He didn't babble very much when he was a baby. He had practically all of the red flags that we look at that will predict that his road to reading was going to be very difficult. So he participated in a language literacy-rich preschool program, and we had a very strong focus on building all of the skills that we briefly touched on today in our chat. And he went into kindergarten with support, a little bit of support from a special education resource teacher in helping him in kindergarten learn how to read, and he left kindergarten reading. He entered first grade reading on grade level. He still continued some special education support in helping him continue to expand his literacy skills. In second grade, he only needed to have some progress monitoring opportunities where we made sure once a month we were checking in with him and checking to make sure that he was maintaining that learning curve and not allowing a gap to establish. In third grade, he only needed to have the progress monitoring kinds of opportunities that all of the other friends in his classroom were experiencing. And I can tell you that he is now in sixth grade. He's at the top of his class. He has to work really, really hard to maintain those good grades, and he's on the honor roll, because he still is a child who neurologically has a learning disability, is what we would consider, or probably even defined as dyslexic. But because of that early foundation for him, we know that early intervention makes a huge difference. So I want to thank you for your joining us in this chat today, and I'm looking forward to this next section where I have an opportunity to listen to your comments and to respond to some of your questions.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Great.
Hello.
Hi. Is there any questions for Dr. Paulson?
Could you talk a little bit about English language learners in terms of preschool and kindergarten curricula?
Sure, and we know that. Well, let me Let me first say that my experience with second language learners or children who are coming from another oral language different than English, and now they're in our settings where they're speaking a different language and learning English all at the same time. So my experience is not all that great or vast. I have read some of the literature. And what I have gleaned from the literature is that when you have an intentional phonological awareness approach to helping children learn English, it makes their learning of that next language, the English language, more effective and more and smooths it along in faster ways. And when you think about it, when we want to learn a new word, what we do is we break that word apart into syllables, and then we blend it together so that until we're able to say it more efficiently. So it's a skill that we naturally use as we're learning in our own language, and there's some pretty good research that is establishing that incorporating phonological awareness skills into those language skills is an important and effective thing to do.
Yeah.
Is there another question for Dr. Paulson?
I have a question. I honestly don't know how far we can get with this, but you did talk about writing,
mm-hmm.
And I found that to be very exciting as the comments that you were able to make about the child's writing and the indicators that showed that, yes, he's really heading into the literacy part of his development. But does the writing component parallel everything that you discussed this afternoon with the early literacy? Is there something, some words of wisdom that you can give us as far as the time that we spend with writing, particularly in kindergarten and first grade?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can even go lower, down into the preschool years.
Yes.
When we help children realize that writing is a developmental sequence, and writing at a level that is where they are at is a really powerful way of helping them see the purpose in the print, the purpose of print in those black squiggly lines. And so one of the strategies that we use and that has become an evidence-based practice is to model for children the level of print that is just above where they're at. So if you have a 3 or 4-year-old kiddo who is scribbling and is at that scribble stage of print, then we sit down and intentionally model for children how you can write at a mock letter or at a random letter level where we use the letters that are in children's names. They see that, and then they know what those next steps are in the writing process, as opposed to always writing as adults and then expecting children to kind of find their way through that developmental sequence. So what I see happening when those activities and opportunities are provided for children in preschool settings is they leave preschool writing at semiphonetic levels, and they have a very strong understanding that letters have a purpose, and then it seems to help move their literacy development forward in very efficient and effective ways. And I know as a speech and language pathologist, when I started adding writing into the treatment that I was providing for young children who had some early literacy issues, it was very effective in helping them move forward through those stages.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Could you identify yourself who just asked that last question?
Yes, I'm from outside of Erie in a little town called Fairview, Pennsylvania, and you were talking about the cold weather. It is cold here. I am a reading specialist at Fairview Elementary School. I'm not involved at the preschool level, so I appreciated those comments from Dr. Paulson. But I do work in the kindergarten and first grade extensively with many of the things that were discussed today.
There are a lot of those early literacy things that are still building in children beyond the preschool stages into kindergarten and first grade. One other comment as I stretch the writing piece from preschool into kindergarten, certainly kid writing, temporary writing, experimental writing, whatever you want to call it at kindergarten is a very effective strategy. And when children are moving into first grade, when you start a spelling program or you have sight words that you expect children to know and recognize, then those become part of the expectation within children's writing. But we can't expect children to be able to spell words that we have not taught the patterns for. Thank you.
I have a question here that was emailed to us, Dr. Paulson.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman writes, I have a concern about a first grader who is a struggling reader. This
mm-hmm.
child has a history of late development with learning letter names and sounds. Also, this child continues to have phonological deficits. At this point, what are the most effective strategies to use to help the child to be a successful reader?
Okay. I think the first thing that I would do is to have a pretty complete assessment in identifying what skills that child has learned, what the child's strengths are, and what are some areas of need. And then in thinking about applying that to other situations with children that I have worked with who have that very same piece. Late development in learning letter names, what that indicates to me is that child probably has some word recall issues, which is based in phonological processing. And the phonological awareness certainly contributes to that notion that phonological processing is an issue. And so spending very good quality and intensive interventions in helping that child learn about how words work. Blending and segmenting is an important component, helping the child figure out how rhyme works. And you put those pieces into functional opportunities and you match the sound elements from a phonological awareness, phonological processing situation, along with the letter knowledge to help them figure out how those words work when you want to start decoding them and figuring out how you can read those words. So it takes a lot of time. The time that you spend now will be much more efficient and effective than if you wait until that child is in third or fourth grade. Then it becomes exponentially more difficult to do it. But the example that I, in my experience, the story that I shared, he was a little kid who was just like that. And with good instructional strategies, you can help that child build those foundation skills.
And if you don't mind, Dr. Paulson, I would add that the time on task is critical here, as well as what's the size of the small groups that
yes.
you're working with this child in.
Yes.
So if you can get this child in a 3 to 5 person group with like deficit skills.
Yes.
And we do it often enough every day, then you might see some more success.
And when you think about, yes, absolutely, and you think about the response to intervention kind of model, 90 minutes is what is recommended in kindergarten, first grade, first and second grade, for that instructional literacy instructional time. And for children who are in that next tier who need some additional help, it's an additional 45 minutes. And then children who are in that very top tier have an additional opportunity. They may need even more time. And so figuring out within your setting how you can provide that that kind of intensive instruction for kids is really important. Enlist the help of your speech and language pathologist because he or she is going to know that underlying sound structure, which may be a really important component for this kiddo.
Good.
Well, I want to encourage you to continue to ask us questions. So if you wouldn't mind, we'd end the live session now. And if you could, email us any question. We'd be happy to follow up and answer it to you. It's straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. And so if you wouldn't mind unmuting your phones and giving a round of applause for Dr. Paulson for her work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And I want to remind you all that January 26th is Dr. Patricia Mathis, and if you want to hear this recorded conversation or share this with your colleagues, please go to the Institute's website and go into the library section. You'll be able to find today's recording on Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Thank you very much, and hopefully you all had a happy New Year, and stay warm.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Mike?
Hello?
Mike, are you still there?